Plants, the Green Frontier. These are the discussions of the podcast Horticult. Its continuing mission, to talk about strange new cultivars, to seek out new flowers and plant them, to boldly garden like no one has before. What's up? This is Blaine from the Horticult. How y'all doing? Today's episode, we have the co-creators of a nonprofit organization called Foodscapes Utah. It helps people to know how to set up a garden using raised garden beds. The biggest goal of this company is to get people to have an understanding of how good and how easy it is to grow a lot of food in your own garden. We talk about how there's a generation gap in home gardeners. So what they do is they provide knowledge and volunteers. So the homeowner, they apply to have this done. The only charge is the supplies to the homeowner. They got to come up with all the raised beds, all the plants and stuff, the irrigation system. Foodscapes puts it all together with volunteers. So it's awesome. Their slogan is, grow your own. So let's get it on. I'm B-Flane.
And I am B-Rad.
And we are the Horticult. Thanks for coming along for the ride. On this episode of the podcast, we have Foodscapes creators, John and Holly. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. We're good. We're so excited to have you.
We're excited to be here.
Thanks for making the trip down here to the lower regions in the Utah Valley.
Our pleasure, for sure.
It was actually a beautiful day to drive down.
Yeah. Nice. Oh, yeah, it was like still kind of chilly, but...
Yeah, storms cleared and the sun was out. It was nice. Beautiful. The mountains look pretty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nice. So let's hear about you guys. So where are you guys from?
Growing up, I moved around a lot, but I was actually born in Heber City, Utah.
Oh, wow.
But I didn't really know Utah growing up. So I mostly from the Southwest, I like to say. So I lived in California and Nevada and Arizona. Most of my family's in Arizona now. But we've been in Utah now in Ogden for 6 years. And we love it.
I grew up in South Dakota, Deadwood, South Dakota. You may have heard of
it. Yes, yes. I watched the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, some people know it from the show.
Usually the only reason people have heard of it. But I grew up there, and then I went to college in Arizona. And then I've moved around with John a little bit. We were in Minnesota before we came to Utah. So the weather is quite the large improvement.
Yeah, from Minnesota. Yeah. We met actually in high school in South Dakota. Yeah. So among the places I lived growing up, one of the last one before college was high school. And then we both went to college in Arizona. Mm-hmm. So I went to Arizona State University, where she went to Northern Arizona University. But we didn't get married for years later, but yeah, yeah.
So you're actually a Spanish professor at Weber State.
Yeah, and that's actually what brought us to Utah, is the job at Weber State. So like Holly said, we were in Minnesota, and I finished PhD in Hispanic linguistics there, and then looked for jobs everywhere. And, you know, we didn't really know a lot about Utah, to be honest, before that. Knew it was beautiful, knew there was lots of skiing and lots of things to do in Utah. So we were excited when we saw that job. And then I interviewed at a couple places, and really when I came to Utah and went to Ogden, the scenery just blew my mind. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we were excited to get closer to family, closer west. So that's why are one of the advantages of Ogden for sure.
You've been here 6 years.
Six years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how did it go from your Spanish professor? So what I didn't know, Holly, what do you do?
I stay home with our kids.
Okay, that's what I do.
And she runs Foodscape in Utah on top of the kids. Like, I mean, the kids are, you know, a lot of work too, which is very valuable.
So you're the face, and she's all the
behind the scenes.
But yeah. What was the inspiration that really pulled it together? I mean,
so growing up, neither one of us had a lot of gardening experience, to be honest. So when we moved to Ogden, we thought, you know, this is a place that we would really like, and we could be here for a while. So we bought a home, and we had a house, and we inherited we have about a quarter acre, mostly grass, mm-hmm. you know. A little bit of vegetable gardening experience at a community garden before that, and really fell in love with the flavor that comes from homegrown food. And then we started playing with our own landscape. So like each year we started taking a chunk of grass out and putting in what we call foodscapes, right? But at the time we put in vegetables, we planted some fruit trees, and I started really just falling in love with the idea of growing our own food and the flavor and the time outside. And it just kind of grew like year by year in the early years. I'm a avid learner. So when I get excited about something, I'm looking for new information, researching, and I really got into it. Over the years, I thought, you know, this is something that we really want to help other people do. Because I feel like, especially with kind of younger generations, there's a lot of people that don't really know what a good tomato tastes like, right? They're used to what they get at the grocery store. When we started growing all of our own food, like, so we grow everything now food-wise. I don't know anything about horticulture like you guys do, you know, like opposite side, but we've experimented with growing everything. But we really thought we were kind of researching different ways we could help other people. I stumbled upon a TED talk by a guy named Ron Finley. So it's this guy in South Central Los Angeles who started a group where people go and help people get into food growing. So I saw that TED talk and started thinking about ideas. And at the time, I took the Master Gardener program through USU Extension and learned that they do a lot of outreach with volunteers and really help community-wise. And I thought, well, how could we, you know, get in on helping people, really? And that's what it is. It's about helping people learn how to grow their own food, know the flavor, and kind of rethink how we look at our landscapes. We don't spend a lot of time in them. And we had some really early success with our own foodscaping thing. And like in our neighborhood, we put a, like our whole front now is foodscape. We have like this little strip of grass, but it's all, and we noticed, this is before Foodscaping Utah started, really. We noticed that our neighbors, when they walked by, they would stop and ask questions. And, oh, what's that? What are you growing there? And we started interacting with our neighbors a lot more than we had before. And we really kind of noticed that there was a lot of interest out there, right? And then I did the Master Gardener program and looked for ways to help people. And then that's kind of how we got the idea to start Foodscaping Utah.
Yeah, I have seen that dude. I have seen that guy.
The Gangster Gardener.
Yeah, yeah. Also called. Yeah. It's like helping in food deserts.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So where they would just do park strips and they plant tomatoes in park strip. And he's like, this is for everybody. And you could just come and grab it.
Yeah.
Yep. Fascinating.
The TED Talk is awesome for people, listeners, for you guys, if you haven't seen it. I mean, it's like, what, 10 minutes? I mean, it's pretty short, but it's really pretty inspirational. And then, so that was part of the inspiration. And our take is slightly different, but it's a very similar idea. And we educate through YouTube and other things as well as that piece. But
have you noticed like an age, a group of people that are more interested, or is it just all like the new generation and older folks and everything?
I think we haven't done research on it, you know, but
well, with your neighbors and things like that, your interactions.
Yeah. I think it's a younger
generation. Well, a lot of our neighbors are, of our same age. Yeah. Just because of the neighborhood.
We're in our 30s.
Okay,
and
sure.
It seems like a lot of our neighbors are about our age, have kids about our age, that kind of thing. But when we do foodscapes or when we do classes or anything, it seems like we have a pretty big age range. Like we had, we've had volunteers come where the volunteer that heard about us originally was maybe in college, but she brought her mom and dad. Great. Things like that. Or we've had, it seems like we have people of all ages most of the time.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
That come to the, that actually show up to volunteer and work.
Yeah. I was wondering if there was a disconnect or a lost age group, you know, that
I think so. I think, you know, two generations ago, people really resonated with where food comes from and growing their own food and had gardens, and then
kind of got lost a little.
Yeah, and maybe I think
mostly we have kind of older and younger, and maybe not so much in the middle now that you mention it.
I think a lot of the young generation, you know, 20s and younger, have grown up without knowing that, and I think there is definitely some of our like return volunteers who come more are younger.
Yeah. Well, right? And it's it seems like it's kind of gained popularity.
And, the idea. Yeah, of... I think interest is really growing.
Well, mm-hmm. And like you guys are saying, once they taste that, yeah. And how much more improved and better it is, the right. Flavor. It's you're hooked, right?
Absolutely. That's what happened to us, and I think that's happening to people. We hope so.
Yeah, I mean, I know that they do grow growers grow tomatoes in greenhouses to try to get that flavor back a little bit, and I think that they've succeeded maybe 20% more flavor than the other tomatoes grown.
Right.
But it's hands down, it's not nearly as good as your own.
I mean, there's nothing like picking your own off the vine, totally ripe. I mean, in grocery stores, you just don't find that, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
It's true.
And we're incredibly spoiled to where now I don't think I've bought a tomato in the grocery store for... like a year, because I'll wait a couple months.
Cardboard, like that's kind of what you're eating.
Yeah,
it's watery, like cardboard. You know, it's like, so we're spoiled. But
how do you choose who gets a foodscape, or can people like have you come do their yard, or is there an application process? Is there like a qualifying factor?
Last year was our first year helping people with install with our so we bring a volunteer group and we're there for 2 hours. And we help, and I have met with the homeowner in advance to kind of make a plan. But for the people who receive those, last year was our first year doing that, so we didn't have a lot of applications. We did do 5 installs last year, but we didn't have to turn anybody down. Nice. So
100%.
Exactly. So there, this year interest has really grown, right? Like, how many applications have we had this year?
Don't ask me that.
I don't know.
I'm not sure.
10 to 15. This year, and then some of them have been ones that are kind of out of our range geographically. We just don't have the infrastructure to serve all of Utah, right? Even though the name's Fruitscaping Utah.
Yeah.
But really now we've had to concentrate more on Ogden. We do have one opportunity for volunteering coming up in Layton, but we're in that area. We have been doing, like, I'll do a consultation and help people with a plan, even if there isn't room in our schedule to do. We had to cap this spring about a month ago.
Yeah.
At 5. We decided 5 was enough for the spring, and then we'll do a couple more in August.
Right. But. And as far as the application process, we do give priority to people who have volunteered for us in the past. So if we have somebody who's volunteered for us a few times and they would like to do a foodscape, those are the people we do first, just because that's a way that we can kind of pay them back for volunteering for us.
Right.
And then we just ask everybody that gets a foodscape to pay it forward in some way. So you can come and volunteer with us. You can donate some of your food to a food bank, or tell your neighbors about us, help your neighbors do a foodscape, just anything like that. Kind of further our mission.
I think that's one thing we talked about with Modern Gardener, is that they're finding people, or there's like companies or nonprofits that are finding homes that people want gardens but are unable to perform it, like elderly
physically
people.
Yeah,
right. And then young people who have never tasted the fruit can do like a food share, mm-hmm. crop share, or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is an awesome idea, because a lot of young people that we talk to are like, but I live in an apartment, so I can't really do anything, and containers are hard on a patio or whatever. But I think, does Green Urban Lunchbox do that?
Yeah, I think Green Urban Lunchbox has a program, like a crop share program kind of thing. Yeah,
they for sure have and a crop share mentioned. Program.
They have a senior program, too, mm-hmm. like where it's, you know, there's somebody experienced who, like you said, exactly what you're saying,
Which is super cool.
That's mm-hmm. very cool.
Because I think that is the generation, like, our grandparents were the ones that always had a garden. Like, my grandma and grandpa always had plums. They always had tomatoes. They always had everything. And as soon as they, you know, passed on and the house was sold, the garden gone. And I think that's kind of a missing community tradition, and it's coming back.
I think so too.
It seems like it really is coming back. Whenever we talk to any of our neighbors that walk by, they all are like, I wish I could do that, or I would like that in my yard, and things like that. And I think it's just what we've always said is I think people want to do it. They just need some help getting started.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's what we feel like we can do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If they've never, you know, gardened at all, I mean, they just, it's the idea of starting is a little intimidating. So that's kind of where we're trying to fill that need and just help people learn.
I've got a question as far as the plan, are the beds or the planting space that you guys have, is it the same every time?
Mm-mm.
Or is it, can it be different? I mean, based on the size of the yard and things like that?
No, they're definitely not the same. They're every time. We try to fit with what the homeowner wants mostly.
Needs, I guess.
And needs. Right. So, I mean, when I go to do an initial consultation, I ask them what they want to grow, how much experience they have, and what they're looking to do, and what they like eating. For us, it's about the food and the flavor. So what are you excited to grow? You know, and then we kind of go from there. But a typical foodscape install on a Saturday for a couple hours is one or two raised beds, and then maybe a fruit tree or a grapevine.
One or the other.
Okay. And that's kind of for people who have zero experience, that's definitely enough. We've kind of advise them to start kind of small.
Yeah.
On the other hand, we had somebody who came over to our foodscape and was just like, oh, I want this. I want to do the whole thing. And that's a situation where when we bring volunteers, we say, you know, it's as many volunteers that can come. You know, and we're going to be here 2 hours. So if we get everything done, great. And if not, then you'd have to be willing to kind of pick up and finish the project or have some of it done in advance. So the homeowner, I mean, it's great for the homeowner either way, right? But
sure.
They kind of need to understand that the limitations of working with volunteers at the same time.
Plus, right? We've really come to find that one or two boxes. And one planting is about what we can get done in the 2 hours with our volunteers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the homeowners have everything ready. John gives a really good list of here's the materials you need to have ready when we
get
there.
Up and it's not like, hey, we need to run to Home Depot like five times or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we've gotten better at that as we do them.
That's cool. So do you have kind of an idea as far as how much a box or two would be able to feed? Or supplement somebody's grocery,
right?
Amount,
sure,
I guess I don't know.
Sure, that's hard to estimate. And one thing we've noticed, just moving from our backyard, that where it's not shady. I mean, it's fine to grow food back there. To our front yard, I mean, we're getting like 10 to 12 hours of direct sunlight a day.
Perfect. Wow.
And I mean, that's one of the advantages of front yards. Most people have shade in their backyard, or if it's a more established neighborhood.
True. Yeah, the trees will shade it out. Yeah.
Yeah. So at least in our neighborhood, people have more trouble growing food in the back than they do in the front because there's no shade trees in the front. Anyway, we out of these beds are at if you take a look at the pictures on our page where we show our front yard foodscape, those I think we got twice the production that we did in the back, really. Like, so anyway, when it comes to food crops, a lot of it is about how much sun they receive, and then how rich the soil is. But you're really harvesting the sun to get the production. So I mean, it's hard to estimate, but I mean, we were blown away this last year.
Yes, like that tomato bed that we saw up there had, and
so
we
this
weighed
is your house
time.
That I was showing.
Yes, that's our house.
Okay,
and we weighed some of the tomatoes. We gave probably half of them away because it was just, I mean, we had,
and that was from one bed.
Such a
and
wow
production of tomatoes. I think we
only grew tomatoes in one bed,
right?
And I think it comes to show that it doesn't take a lot to grow a ton of food. And if you put one bed and you put it in the right spot, mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of where the education part comes in.
And the right soil.
And I think sometimes people are excited to grow vegetables or start growing their own food, but they might not necessarily have success right away. You know, they try it and it's like, oh, it didn't work out too well, you know. But if you have kind of a piece to help you get started, if you start with success, then you know, if you have one bed, and then next year maybe you want to do another one, because and you could expand slowly over time.
Yeah. Wow, I like that.
I think it's, I mean, if you look, I'm those pictures I was sharing, I think they are aesthetically pleasing. Like, compared to just a flat lawn to a full yard with garden beds, and I mean, it adds dimension, it adds lights and colors and all these things. You can put like your front bed that you had, your park strip. I mean, you have like, was it Russian sage, and you have ornamental things in there. So it's beautiful.
Yeah.
That's what we're shooting for. Thank you. Thank
you. Great.
Yeah. There's definitely, when I think about it, there's definitely a design. I mean, that's where the scaping part of the foodscaping comes in. There's definitely a design part. Like in ours there, the beds are kind of arranged around the fruit trees, which are a, kind of a centerpiece. And then we worked in artichoke, which has a beautiful purple flower. So even when we're picking edibles, they have some ornamental quality. So we're always mixing in a lot of flowers. I mean, that has a lot of benefits to the foodscape, not only aesthetically, but it brings in beneficial insects. And yeah, but so there's definitely a design part to it. You know, if people are starting small with just one bed, it's usually about picking the best spot for sun or for access to water or that kind of thing. But when you get more elaborate, then there's a lot more to be designed. Like for me, that's the designing part I get really excited about. I really like to design it. And look, I mean, painting a picture for me, you know, I want to figure out where the flowers are going to go and how we can.
So do you guys have a grant that you're able to get for the plants and stuff? Or you guys put this up yourselves? And
no. So for the foodscapes, the homeowners pay for all the materials with the exception of the City of Ogden Green Waste donates compost.
Sweet.
Which is super awesome. They just started doing that this year. So we show up basically with a truckload of compost that the city has donated. And then the homeowners provide everything else. If they want to do raised beds and they're made out of redwood, that can be a little more expensive. If you want to just mound or plant in the ground, that's a lot less expensive. And then you have the volunteers to help you get started. But the homeowners provide all their own materials. We just provide the knowledge and the volunteers.
Volunteers are like this this force for good. And are they returning? I mean, do you see the same faces over and over?
Sometimes we do.
Sometimes we do.
Yeah, sometimes
okay,
we do.
We do, right. Yeah. But
we're still pretty young, so we only did five. I mean, five was a lot to do last year. But,
oh, sure.
You know, five groups of people. But yeah, we do have some returning volunteers. And what's really, really awesome is the USU Extension. When the Master Gardeners do their volunteer hours, they can come to Foodscapes. And that
calculator, it works towards
right. Yes, that works towards their volunteer hours, which is really awesome.
So we're tied into the Weber County Extension office. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys know how the Master Gardener program works, but they're required to do 40 hours of volunteer after they finish the class to get their Master Gardener certificate. Yeah, and they're excited, and they're great to have too, right? I mean, because they're people a lot of times with some knowledge that can help.
Right. So you can say, go plant this. And then
you're not worried.
They can do it.
Right, exactly.
But at the same time, it's really kind of fun when people come to learn, because that's part of the reason that we do them. And it can serve a lot more people than just the homeowner, because the people that come to volunteer can learn how to plant a fruit tree or how to build the beds or whatever. So it's a learning opportunity and a volunteer opportunity.
Yeah.
We have just as many people show up who the first thing they say is, oh, I don't know anything, you know, but I'm really excited.
Fine.
I'm here
to
learn.
Great. I'll teach you.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's what we think about it. And, we had a table at the, Ogden Farmers Market last year. And that sparked kind of a lot of interest. People were like, oh yeah, foodscaping Utah. What are you guys? What do you do? And then, you know, that's when we started talking to people who were interested in volunteering too.
Right. And who wanted to learn how to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. See, that's what's kind of cool too, is that you might just have people volunteer, find out how to do it. And then they start doing it to their yard and their neighbor's yard. Yeah. So you're influencing a whole neighborhood and you personally didn't have anything to do with it.
Right.
I mean,
a nice ripple effect.
Yeah,
for sure.
And that was one thing we talked about. I think it was it Cameron? I can't remember. Someone we interviewed. You start it in the neighborhood and it just kind of catches fire in the neighborhood.
If you make it look good, right? I mean, that's a big part of it. Like we want people to start off with success, have something that looks nice. And then, neighbors are interested.
Yeah.
Like I was saying earlier.
Neighbors in our
in our right neighborhood
by us that yeah. have already done it.
Yeah.
So is it, cool. So since I'm not into gardening with fruit and vegetables,
yeah.
Does it actually take less water per square foot than lawn?
So we calculated. No, the reason I reacted that way because we were really interested in that. It takes less if we compare our front yard, which is zero shade, moving from grass to foodscape. I think we see about a 75% decrease in water use. It could be more, but I mean, we have our food jam packed in there, right? Like our beds are filled, I mean, using as much space as we can. And then also there's fruit trees everywhere that there is in beds. We do have paths. I mean, we make sure we have 3 feet and we put some pea gravel in to make it look nice. But in general, and we did move to drip irrigation, of course, in those beds too. So I think that's a big part of the water savings. The flip side of that is we're getting so much more production than we would if it was just grass, right?
Oh, I mean, so much.
We're eating yeah. the food. I mean, we're saving on our grocery bill. And then also, I mean, the water that goes into food production that's produced on a large scale is going to be way more than the drip irrigation. So there's some water savings kind of in the where we're replacing food that we might have bought at the grocery store too.
Oh, sure.
Right.
Have you ever heard of square foot gardening?
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of the concept.
Yeah, well, so where, I mean, our, well, when I'm designing kind of how we lay out our beds, there's, it's definitely spacing wise and things is very much more like square foot gardening than it would be. I mean, because if you have full sun and you have really rich soil, square foot gardening, for people who aren't familiar with that, a lot of times a seed label will have a spacing recommendation. You know, mm-hmm. Tomatoes, it's going to say 3 to 4 feet spacing. Right. And then a square foot gardening, each square foot becomes a plant. It could be one tomato plant per square foot, really. And then ours is usually kind of in the middle, but in the space that's in between. So say, let's just talk tomatoes for a second. If you had a tomato every foot, instead of doing that, I maybe space it 18 inches to 24 instead, but then grow something in between them. So that's where I'm mixing a flower like a marigold or something. Or another thing that I've been kind of learning a lot more about is how to multi-crop. So I'll grow a fast-growing cool weather crop in there that we harvest, then later that gives a little bit more room for the tomatoes to spread once we pull that out. So I don't know. We don't really think too much about exactly doing it square foot gardening, but kind of developing this our own style and approach to doing it.
Yeah, I just found a group. I joined it a while ago and it's like, oh, that's interesting and maybe I'll try it sometime. But there's like a full following. I don't know if it was like there's a book or something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't know the whole history on it. Yeah, but yeah, there's definitely a book. I assume books like there were. But it's been around for some time. But I mean, and I think it's great. Like the idea that you can get more production out of a smaller area. I mean, a lot of people don't have acreage, right, and are interested in starting, so that part definitely resonates with us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it fits Local Escapes. Cynthia B too,
yeah,
was like, she's pushing that Local Escapes design, less water usage and stuff like that, and there's actually some contractors that are taking it on,
yeah,
and are becoming Local Escapes right from the get-go instead of having to dig out your yard and put in the drip. And this is something that's people great. Can implement, especially if their goal is to use less water. This is less water plus you're saving on groceries.
Right.
Right.
And
right.
food costs are going through the roof.
Right.
Yeah. I'm curious about how you recharge the soil with nutrients and micronutrients and mm-hmm. things like that. Mm-hmm. What is a good staple that you guys use?
So we put 2 inches, well, 1 to 2 inches of compost on every fall.
Okay.
And you can put compost in on any time. It's great for the soil, no matter what you're growing, right? Okay. It adds organic matter and brings a lot of benefits. But we like to do it in the fall, and that gives the earthworms time to incorporate some of the compost and the rain time to kind of work it in. And sometimes, depending on your compost source, you might have higher salt content. And if you do it in the fall, you can put more on without having to worry about that, because the rain and snow can drain the salt out over the winter. So that's all we do. Yeah. Okay, and we really don't fertilize with, sometimes we'll use a little bit of organic, nitrogen fertilizer, like a blood meal.
Yeah.
But typically we don't fertilize anything at all.
Yeah.
Really. Yeah. I mean, it's all about the soil being really rich.
I've got another question as far as crops, certain crops. So we've been talking a little bit about tomatoes, and maybe some cold crops, maybe some radishes and things like that you can interplant. What is your guys's like favorite, aside from tomatoes, like what do you guys grow in addition to tomatoes?
Our favorite crop.
Yeah.
Nectarines.
Oh man, I wasn't even thinking fruit.
You know, I mean, yeah, there's nothing like, I mean, peaches, man. But we have one,
but yeah, we have
off the tree ripe. Yeah. It's just
amazing, huh?
Oh, it's amazing. It really is. Yeah, like it blows your mind. It almost
tastes fake.
Yeah, my sister was visiting, and that was her comment. She's like, "This tastes. I can't believe this is actually food. Like, it tastes like. It, I mean, it tastes like it's too good to be true.
So sweet and delicious. Yeah.
And we have it's called a heavenly white nectarine, and they're huge and they're sweet and they're delicious. That's probably one of our favorites.
Yeah. What's on your top list?
I was gonna say, for cold weather, I love having lettuce. Yeah. Just walking out and picking lettuce all the time is awesome. And we have a little greenhouse. So, and we did a low tunnel this year.
I was going to ask that.
Yeah. And we, our low tunnel actually did really well this year. We've been eating lettuce since March. And it's just to walk out and be able to pick a salad. Because that's the thing that goes bad in the fridge if you don't eat it. I hate throwing away food. So if you can just walk out and pick your own bag of lettuce, I love that. Squash. I also love squash. We grew a baby butternut squash this fall, and now all my neighbors probably hate butternut squash because we had so much squash that I was giving it away every other weekend.
I just saw a post of a lady on Facebook. She showed a box of squash.
Yeah.
She's like, "I'm still eating squash from last year," and she wanted other people to share what they're still eating. But it was just like,
it gets a little starchy the longer you go.
Yeah.
But it's still good. It's still good.
Yeah.
But we had, I don't know, we just had an explosion of squash. Love making squash soup.
Are you interested in, or have you grown any type of microgreens? So and basically broccolis and spinach and those even lettuce.
Right.
And harvest them super early.
We haven't, really.
We haven't.
No. Okay.
Yeah.
But we kind of talked about it this winter, we had kind of joked that our lettuce that we grew in the greenhouse was kind of a microgreen on accident, just because it was little. And I was I'm just going to
purposely do it
it didn't intend. It was in the middle green.
Yeah.
That we just harvested and ate anyway.
What's the variety of lettuce? I'm just curious.
What did we do? We did a black-headed Simpson, which is not my
favorite,
but it's fine. I mean, it's good.
Yeah.
But what's that butter lettuce one? Do you remember?
The butter crunch?
Butter crunch.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's awesome.
Yeah.
We're excited. We put in I can't remember. I think it's crimson, a red romaine.
It's kind of purpley.
Kind of for the aesthetic value.
Yeah. Give me some color. Yeah.
Yeah, some color in there.
Oh, cool.
But we haven't eaten any of that yet.
No, but it's coming on.
We have a specific shade garden bed. So once it gets too warm for the one in the sun, the shade garden will still have lettuce.
Yeah.
Which, because then we have it all the time.
Yeah, for people who have grown lettuce, and you know that in July it gets bitter typically in Utah, but we found the spot with less sun. It's between houses too, so it's just really cooler in there, and the lettuce holds on a lot longer with the good flavor.
Do you have trouble with slugs, snails, bugs in general?
I mean a little bit of. In May,
it's got to be the drip.
Yeah.
The drip helps a lot.
Yeah.
The drip helps a lot. And then we have a lot of good bugs in our yard. We always have a lot of beneficials. We try to
grow a lot of flowers.
We grow a lot of flowers.
Perennial, too. Like you were mentioning the Russian sage. I mean, yarrow and sedum and we mix up. And lavender, a lot of lavender and, you know. I think that brings in a lot of the beneficial insects that take care of some of the pest problems for us. But yeah, like you said, with the slugs, it's just the drip keeps this you're only watering right where the plant is, right? Mm-hmm. So there's not water everywhere.
Right. We had some slugs last year, but not.
The temperatures warmed up. They pretty much disappear.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
I'm considering this. So what I did last year was I made a section of my little front bed mosquito repellent. So that was the idea. I picked certain plants that were in repellents. So that's what they used actually to repel. Most of them lived. So the lemon balm, the lavender. I lost my catmint because it was in a pot. And then I lost my basil. Those will help that. So what I'm going to try to do this year is incorporate food in my front little garden bed.
Awesome.
Nice.
So I don't have to change my irrigation. I can just incorporate them with my flowers. And I had marigolds last year too, so that helped. You're like on the opposite side, so I'm more ornamental, incorporating vegetables, kind of incorporating perennials into your vegetables. But that's a thought. There you go.
Yeah. Well, we think it helps with the bugs.
Absolutely.
For sure. Yeah. Because we have a lot of good bugs in the yard, and I think that helps a lot. And we have bees, so we like to have a lot of flowers too.
So you got a beehive back there?
Yeah. We do. Holly's the beekeeper.
Nice.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
And then they, you know, pollinate all our fruit trees and all of our squash flowers.
So my brother-in-law, they have a hive. They're in Washington, but he was like harvesting and he had a section of the comb. Isn't it okay to like eat the comb?
It
like
is.
You could just hawk it.
People buy it and sell it for lots of money. It's a fancy dessert. I just saw something online that somebody was looking for it to have at like a wedding reception. And they just put like a frame out and then people like
just come
dip
and grab
your crackers
some?
Or whatever.
Wow.
That's awesome. Really?
Yeah, it is awesome. Well, you should, our kids love it. They're like, can we have a honey frame? And they just sit at the kitchen table with a box of Wheat Thins and dip them in honey and eat them.
So you're not allergic to bees? I hope.
As far as I know. Yeah. No, I've been stung a few times. And
no, you're not.
No,
well, no, I didn't have to go to the ER or anything. I did get stung in the face and my whole I swelled shut.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We are given a lot of food away. You know, one part that we haven't explored as much is preserving. I mean, we have preserved quite a bit,
right.
But I mean, there's people that are way, like you mentioned that Facebook post. I mean, these are people that are you know, into homesteading and really wanting to preserve as long as possible. We'd rather give more away and preserve less.
Right, really. Just because it's a lot of work.
Yeah, preserving is more work, yeah.
Not kidding, but
I mean, we were still eating green beans like a month ago, though. I mean, we did, but mostly how we preserve is freezing.
Right.
Freezing. Okay,
and then we did raisins. We had a lot of raisins last year because
you
can dry them in our little greenhouse, and it's not actually a lot of work.
Yeah.
So we do things like that, but we haven't really made the leap into canning or anything.
That's what I was saying. I was curious about bottling canning.
And
that's
then we freeze a lot of stuff.
Yeah, we freeze a lot. We have a big deep freezer and like all our vegetables go in there.
And then we just
pull them out all winter long.
Yeah.
And then we just like leave them on the neighbor's door and ring the bell and run.
2018 was the year of the butternut squash. Like it was was just incredible. I mean and it's so good, really. So
it is really good.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's not like zucchini. Like, don't get me wrong, I like zucchini. Zucchini's fine, but I mean, you sound like you've had some of the winter squashes. They're just more rich and creamy.
They are.
And, yeah, they're so good.
The acorn and the butternut.
Yeah,
and the Hubbard and all of those different.
Yeah.
They're great. Do you And I'm curious about the amount of space that you have in the boxes to grow. Are you're really trying to encourage upward growth? So with your tomatoes that want to sprawl, they're the indeterminate ones, and they you're either pruning them or you need to grow them up a trellis.
Right. We do trellis. Okay. Yeah, most of our so if it's an indeterminate vining tomato, it's on a trellis for sure.
Cool.
And then we can space them 2 feet apart and still. If you have a 7-foot trellis, then you still have plenty of sun room. And with that, like you were saying, vertical. Yeah. I mean, you can really grow a lot more in a smaller space, which I think is appealing to a lot more people. You know, if you put in a small bed, you can still get a production that you would in a larger, you know, area. Yeah. And if you don't have a lot of space to dedicate it or to dedicate to food growing, then that works out really well. We do grow some determinate ones, like bush style, and then kind of work those into the design too.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I have a hard time getting around the planter. Like, I would rather just till my lawn up and directly put it into the soil.
Yeah.
Have you had issues keeping them moist, or have you had some dry out, or because you have it on the dripper, you got them on a timer and everything's good?
Yeah, that's a good question. We do, I would say one disadvantage of the raised bed would be water use. I mean, because the drainage is so good, you do end up needing a little bit more water. But on the other hand, the plants love the excellent drainage. Like, so they really thrive in that environment. So you end up getting more production, I think, with the, I mean, there's a lot of advantages too. There's, if you incorporate compost into native soil, I mean, actually most of our beds, vegetable beds in the back, and they're not in framed beds. They are raised up a little bit because we've added so much compost to them and mixed it in that case. But I mean, you can grow that way too. It and be almost, I think maybe there's a little bit more production in a raised bed is one of the advantages.
Is there a ratio, like just straight compost, or do you have like peat moss mixed in? Is there a ratio that you go by, or soil from the site?
I think the best mix would be 50% native topsoil, 50% compost. Mm-hmm. And for us, it's green waste compost. And I mean, each municipality might have a little bit different compost mix. Even the batches can be different. But, you know, you could go 60-40, or Utah soils in general are just really low in organic matter. Honestly, you could grow in 100% compost if you wanted to, if it didn't have the salt in it and you made sure it was good. But native soil also usually has a lot of good minerals in it, and there's a lot of good reasons. I know a lot of people that do raised beds that do soilless mixes or mix in peat moss, but I think we definitely prefer to do native soil and then green waste compost. And then, you know, I haven't done any too much research on it, but I think there's more life in the soil, like microorganism life and stuff with the compost in there. So that's how we do it usually.
And there's no barrier. Like, I've heard people laying down cardboard or plastic or whatever to keep it from the native soil, from your mix that you have in the containers. So the worms and stuff can go back and forth.
That's a good question. So depending on how many inches deep the raised beds are, that's a factor. And it depends on what you're going over. So in our case, when we do a foodscape, as opposed to getting a sod cutter and pulling sod out or tilling it, the way we love is actually the cardboard. Like, again, that depends on how deep the box is. So a lot of times we tell people to get good drainage, we recommend 6 inches, but we love 12 inches. So 6 to 12 inches, you're getting even better drainage, and then you don't have to bend down as far. Nice. Beyond 12 inches, you're not getting as much advantage from the drainage, but it makes it, you know, like at 24 inches, you hardly have to bend down, right? If you only had 4 inches, maybe that you wouldn't want to do the cardboard. But say you have 12 inches and you're going over a perennial grass, that's where the cardboard comes in. And so we mow the grass as low as possible, like almost, you know, digging into the soil a little. Soak it and soak cardboard on top of it, and then build the bed right over that. And you're right that'll block the earthworms for the first year, maybe. Yeah. But you have plenty of soil above that. And then the cardboard, the nice thing about that, as opposed to plastic or landscape fabric, is that breaks down. And then the next year, there's no barrier there. And then their earthworms can get back in there.
Because I've heard it both ways. Like, sure. I've heard it not to use cardboard at all. Right. And then I've heard it, you know, cardboard, there's negatives to cardboard, like it does something wrong to the soil or something. I don't have any experience with it.
Yeah.
Because that's the one thing about putting it directly into the soil is that it really doesn't dry out.
Well, right. At least my right. soil right. is so clay. It's yeah. like right. holds on to the water for 3 months.
Yeah.
But yeah, I hate container gardening. So yeah. that's him.
Oh, right. It's so hard. It's a lot more challenging to keep things watered.
It can be tricky, yeah. I remember a year using some of those big like 20-gallon landscape black pots.
Yeah.
And running a dripper from one pot to the next, down my driveway. So it was on concrete. So I'm at a garden on concrete. I'm going to try this cool. out. And it worked, good full sun exposure, but yield was kind of low. And so I abandoned that project after yeah. one season. So
I think it's more challenging in containers. And I think raised beds are container. Yeah. Somewhere in between for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you use wood that has been treated not to rot?
We don't. Yeah.
So you're going to have to replace them sometime.
So,
or do you put rocks? So there's a drainage point in between the soil and the wood.
Or some kind of something. We don't. So we, in our front yard, or in our, all of our raised beds are redwood. So redwood or cedar will be naturally rot resistant. So we're expecting maybe 20 years of life.
That's dang good.
Yeah, that would be awesome. But that's also, all it's doing is holding the soil, right? I mean, we're not building a house out of it. Like it can start to wear and tear and still be useful. Redwood and cedar are both a lot more expensive. But so if a homeowner wants to put in a raised bed and doesn't have that kind of budget, if you use 2x, construction lumber, you could get the construction lumber is usually Douglas fir. You can with the 2x, you can still get. I mean, this we haven't done on our own. Like the redwood, we know is lasting well, but the I would expect maybe eight to ten years, and then maybe you would have to replace it. But that's long enough to make it worth the value. And redwood's going to be 2 to 3 times more expensive than fir. But the 2x gives you a little bit more time, right? Because the wood just is stronger, lasts longer.
Well, that's another good thing about the drip is that you're not saturating the entire bed.
Right. Right. Yeah.
I mean, you could like paint it, I guess.
Yeah.
Or you could do
what's that oil?
Linseed oil.
Yeah.
Linseed oil. Yeah.
And that's supposed to help it last longer.
Yeah.
That's what I was going
to
say.
And it's a natural.
Yeah.
My thought was, holy cow, if everyone did this, they would reduce their water usage by, you said, like 70%-ish.
If you did more ornamental, more wood chip mulch, more, you know, hardscapes and that kind of thing. I mean, and had a smaller section, like we've gone, you know, to the extreme of putting in food. But for the average person who wants to get started and they want to take out grass, I mean, they could use 25% of the grass of the water. I mean,
yeah.
In our case, in that same area, I think we've got 25% savings using 75% of the water. But yeah.
Oh, I misunderstood.
Yeah.
And then you get that food. You get that much food from this using less water.
Yeah.
If everyone did it, there would be more food than we could ever eat.
Yeah.
I mean, if everyone did it, really,
right.
Think of all the turf just in my neighborhood. Like nobody has done anything to their yard because we're all brand new houses.
Sure.
Right.
And it's just like, it makes me kind of sick a little bit because I think about how much water is used and I use the bare minimum of water.
Right.
And I'm actually not even going to water my park strip this year because I'm like, I'm just going to get rid of it. And I need motivation, so I'm just going to kill it.
We got to do something with this brown patch because we turned the sprinkler off.
Yeah.
Well, and with the park strip, I mean, typically there's a sidewalk. It's surrounded by concrete. And when we moved in, of course, the sprinklers were set up to water the sidewalk, right? I
mean, right, because that's the only way to do it.
That's 100% waste of that water, right? You don't even get grass out of it. But yeah, you know, and then the other part of it is the health benefits, right? I mean, the access to really quality. No food is more nutritious than the food that you can pick right there. Like, it doesn't have to travel in a truck 3,000 miles, picked way too early.
You know what's been put on it. You know what fertilizer's had.
Yeah.
If you use pesticides or not.
Yeah.
I mean, you know everything about it.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And
so
then
flavor, nutrition. And
all the water savings. I mean,
We could change this whole entire world if everyone got rid of grass and put in gardens.
Yeah. Now, by one saying that, though.
Oh, he's like, hey, yeah. Hold on yeah. a second.
Now, by
buddy.
Saying that, though, but there is work that has to go.
Right,
toward.
No, no. Sure.
So it's not even just like the install yeah. as well. Right. There's some maintenance that goes along with that. Sure. And so it's something that everybody should be yeah. fully aware of.
I guess for that's sure. hard for me to like. Realize because I got a lot of time and I could see me out there with my kids and I could like we could build relationships yeah. based upon helping each other, and my yard's not that big. I mean, I'm thinking about ripping it all out and putting in ornamentals and a little section of garden, whatever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I could totally manage that because I know how.
Yeah.
And I think people have lost that skill to be able
for
to
sure.
take care of plants
for sure. And it's hard. It's easier to learn something because there's so much information available, and it's harder to learn something because there's so
time.
Much information available.
It's
because
just too much.
People have be, trouble finding the good information.
Well,
you know,
there's inaccurate information.
Sure.
So then you think, oh well, I'll do this, and it's like, oh, I wonder why my stuff all died. I shouldn't have listened to that website.
Yeah.
So it's hard to filter the information
right.
that's available
yeah.
too.
And I think that's a good thing too because we're local.
Yeah.
So
right.
being local, this is what works for our area, and
right.
this is what we've been able, you, mm-hmm. people have been able to do here.
Right.
For
right.
sure. And that makes
mm-hmm.
a big difference.
We're not listening to someone from the East Coast that has like the best soil in the world and rains every exactly on time. So they don't even need an irrigation system.
Right. Right. Oh, yeah. I mean, in the East, I mean, the grass grows, right? I mean,
right.
it's like
right.
the sprinklers are,
yeah, they don't have
you
sprinklers.
Don't need sprinklers, right? I mean,
Washington State doesn't.
Yeah.
Are you kidding
yeah.
me? They don't have it's like moist in the air all the time.
Right.
The big thing on the work part of it for me, and I obviously spend a lot of time and work, is it's something that I really enjoy. Like I'm passionate about it while I'm doing it, you know. So there's something to be said for the like the magic of planting a seed and eating it later, you know. So there's that part of it, but really I think a lot of people in general kind of, you know, outside of our bubble here where we're all excited about plants, right?
Right.
In general, I think a lot of people view their landscape as a chore, right?
Straps,
you
yes.
know, and they're like, oh, I gotta mow the grass. And at the same time, I think that we tend to underestimate how much care grass takes here in Utah. It's hard to grow good grass in mm-hmm. Utah. Like you have to be on top of fertilizing and irrigation and mowing
right.
and aerating and it, I mean, or you your lawn suffers big time, and,
yeah.
and that's happening a lot too. But as opposed to it being a chore for us, it's like it's an inspiration. It's time to go out there and enjoy it and interact. I mean, we've built ourselves a little oasis, really. You know, that's how it is for us. But I think people could enjoy a lot more their landscapes if they really think about how they're using them. And we think food in a landscape is the best use. That there could be for a landscape.
Well, and with our situation in particular, we felt like our front yard was just a waste of space. We were never out there.
Yeah.
It's, you know, we have little kids and it's not like they play in the front yard because it's right
yeah.
there on the street and right. stuff. And so it was just grass that never was used. Not only
right.
is it grass that you have to maintain, but we never were out there. And now we're in our front yard all the time, and that's why we talk to our neighbors.
Right.
Really.
I love that part of it where it's like connecting you with neighbors that you normally may not
absolutely
right.
yeah no we didn't
yeah.
know a lot of our neighbors a few
yeah.
right but
well
yeah.
and people just
with...
walk by and stop and talk to us, and we're out there, you know, like not only do they stop and look at it because it's cool or it's different, whether they think it's cool or not, but it's different for sure.
Yeah.
And we're out there a lot because it's like, oh, is there something sprouting, are there flowers out here, can we pick beans?
Well, we're there, so let's tell us how people can find you, volunteer, applicate, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So our website is foodscapingutah.org. We have a Facebook page, also Foodscaping Utah. We have an Instagram account that's Foodscaping Utah. We have a YouTube channel. All of that stuff you can get to from our website, though, foodscapingutah.org. There's an applicant page there. We are full for applicants for the spring, so we're not taking any more in the spring, but we might have some space in the late summer to do maybe one or two more. But then we'll start getting stuff rolling for next spring too. And there's a place to apply for volunteer opportunities on there too.
Yeah.
So there's a volunteer application page that you can do, or you can email us foodscapingutah at gmail.com. And so if you see our stuff online and you want to volunteer and there's not an address posted, that's because we don't post the addresses because they're homes. So we just ask people to let us know if you want
to
come.
You have to RSVP first.
Yeah, yeah, RSVP and let us know that you want to come and we'll send you the address.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's wonderful. How you get a hold of us.
Fantastic.
So just real quick, let's just say you all of a sudden get 100 volunteers ready to go. Would you
awesome.
Would you increase the amount of foodscapes that you'd be able to do this year?
It takes a little more time to answer, but we hope to start a program where master gardeners or other people who want to get into master gardening can start learning to do some of the consultation part, because I'm doing that all on my own now. Right. Yeah.
That's really the hardest part is getting everything planned and coordinated so that the volunteers can just show up. We need a couple more of those people also.
Yeah.
But yes, that would absolutely increase our number that we could do if we had
and we're doing more classes too this year. Like we did a drip irrigation class, and then you know we'll do a couple other things too, but that would be the goal, is to grow and inspire other people to do something similar that's not necessarily Foodscaping Utah exactly, but you know to help in their own community, help each other start putting in foodscapes and really kind of run in with the idea. That's our hope anyway.
But cool. We could really use a lot of volunteers for this spring.
Yeah. We've got every Saturday in May and then June 8th.
And one August 10th.
Yeah.
So if you're interested and you're in Ogden, go check it out and then you can learn how to do it yourself.
That's right. Exactly.
Sweet. Thank you guys.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having us.
Nice. Yeah, no problem. See you, Brad.
Later.
There we go. That was episode number 72. Foodscapes Utah with John and Holly. I want to thank Brad for coming out and doing this podcast with me. I want to thank you, Podlings. We love you. Thank you so much for listening. Foodscapes Utah for coming out and recording this with us. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed this podcast. Come and find us on Facebook. You can watch these recordings live on Facebook. Most every Wednesdays, I usually put out a feeler to let people know that we have a guest. We don't always have a guest every Wednesday. You can find it live on Facebook. You can watch replays later. If you like it, share us, review us, all that sort of stuff. The more people do that, the more we can get out and share this awesome podcast with everybody. So thank you so much. We love you, and plant on, Babylon.